You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Screen Heroes. This is episode 196. I am Derek, your regular host, and I have with me virtually online on the World Wide Web my two lovely hosts, Ryan.
Hi.
And Ray.
Hi.
And we are sounding a little different, I'm sure. As most of you know, we're not really supposed to go anywhere. And so we are in our own individual places and we're recording online. So things are going to sound a little bit different. There's not going to be a live stream right now. We're going to come up with a solution for that here as soon as we can. But
I got my own house just for the occasion.
Yeah. Well, we are recording on different floors, Ray and I, to be fair. But that's more so we don't interact with each other's audio. But anyway, we'll kick things off with news, of course. And then we are actually going to be returning to our bad movie reviews segment with Ryan's latest pick, The Last Dragon. So after the news segment, that's what we'll be moving over to there. So, all right, let's kick off news. Everything's closed. Nothing's in production. That's cool. If you listened to last week's short modified kind of mini episode, I went through a long list of productions that had been delayed or put on hold indefinitely, as well as some stuff that was going straight to video. But Ryan and Ray, you guys missed that last week. So is there anything you think is worth bringing up or telling people in the world of entertainment?
Well, Birds of Prey dropped today. So that's nice on video on demand.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to rewatch that. I thought it was a fun movie.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that they would put it on like the streaming service, DC Universe or something like that, but not that lucky, I guess.
So it's what, yeah. Like $20 to watch that?
To buy it.
To buy it?
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Digital purchase. Yeah, so there's like a split. Some things like NBC Universal put four of their movies out to rent for $19.99 each for 48 hours, that kind of rental program that like Amazon has, but through NBC Universal. But Bloodshot and Birds of Prey, and I believe Sonic the Hedgehog are going to be for purchase for the same price.
Yeah, it's hard to justify $20 for rental.
Yeah, yeah, especially given that so many people are, you know, restricted with their income right now on top of it. But, you know, at least $20 to purchase it, that's standard. That's what all new movies cost to buy digitally. So at least that's not anything different. So that's good.
Right.
Anything else? Anything else that hit that you guys want to talk about from that standpoint?
Well, Wonder Woman was definitely pushed back until August, and it's going to open August 14th now instead of in June. And then also Scoob and the Lin-Manuel Miranda musical In the Heights, it was also pushed back, but the two of them don't have set dates at this time.
Gotcha. Yeah, the fall is going to get crowded really quickly, I imagine.
I thought the Wonder Woman comment that they put out was pretty funny, where it was like, oh, this movie was meant to be viewed on the big screen, so that's what we're going to stick with. But then, like, I don't know, a week ago or so, they said there's no chance of it coming out on streaming services because the only way to make our money back is to release it in movies. So
yep.
It's like, what was it? What is it, the money, or is it the fact that it was made to be viewed on the big screen? I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. It's definitely a financial decision more than anything. I mean, look, obviously I like seeing things on the big screen, especially superhero, sci-fi, fantasy, blockbuster stuff. But this is a financial decision, right? Because movies never make the same at home that they do on the big screen, unless the big screen was a flop, unless it wasn't a hit and it became kind of a cult following. You know, or it was a limited release or something like an indie project. You know, I don't think there are any superhero flicks that made more money on video than they did at the box office.
Right. And Wonder Woman certainly wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't think so. So, yeah. So August for that, things are just going to continue to get pushed. I'm waiting to hear what they're going to do with Black Widow. That's, of course, been delayed as well. We just don't know until when. Though there's been, you know, rumors circulating that they'll drop it on Disney Plus. I I would still be shocked if they do that. I mean, right now there's kind of a content drought on there, right? They had the Mandalorian, then they had Clone Wars, and now they have nothing. And so I understand that that would get subscribers going, but again, they're not, is that enough money to offset the lost box office?
Yeah, I mean, my thing about Black Widow going, if it went to the streaming service, is kind of a punch in the face to, you know, the first female superhero, well, second, I guess, female superhero in the MCU getting her own movie. Is, you know, she's just going to go straight to on demand. That would, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, I don't know. It's a tough decision, though, because it would also probably make a ton of people very happy to be able to watch that at home right now with their kids and everything like that without having to spend a fortune.
It's true. It just seems like it's, you know, women already get the shaft when it comes to the amount of female superheroes we see on the screen. So having it drop to the little screen instead of the big screen right away would be a little disappointing. But yeah, so it would be nice to sit at home and watch it myself.
Ray, do you have any thoughts on that?
No, not really. You guys are feminist as fuck tonight. Go on.
Just tonight? I mean, come on.
You guys have listened to me for the last like 6 years. Do your thing. Like...
It's finally rubbed off.
Fair enough. Well, so an interesting fact, for the first time since movies have existed in theaters, the U.S. box office reported $0. So that's great. So I guess that means every theater in the country is functionally closed at this point. So as far as entertainment,
the 1930s, is that like,
I mean, whatever the first theater showing was, I'm not sure when that was. But you know, that means our news segment's probably going to be a little bit shorter than usual. We're probably not going to have a ton to talk about until this is kind of reaching some light at the end of the tunnel, when at least productions have new dates to get started again and things of that nature. Last week I mentioned a lot of the nighttime talk shows went on hiatus, and at least some of those are supposed to be coming back in the next week or two. John Oliver, for example, is supposed to return. If not this week, it's next week. And so maybe we'll start having some things moving at a smaller scale production.
Are they going to have audiences?
I assume not. That would be my assumption. I would be shocked if they did. Mainly because most of these shows are filmed in New York, and New York is basically on a lockdown situation, just like we are here in Kansas City. So I don't know that going to see, you know, Stephen Colbert or Jimmy Fallon can constitute essential business, but.
Right.
Maybe it is for somebody. I don't know. But yeah, so this new segment, we'll just have to kind of play it by ear and do what we can. So our episodes may be a little bit shorter than usual, but we still want to get content out to you guys. Is there anything else news-wise that you guys would like to cover?
We had Rosario Dawson cast. Not officially. It's still technically a rumor, but it's been confirmed by a couple other big news sources. That she's joining the Mandalorian season 2.
Yes, that would be pretty big. You know, there's been all this talk for a couple of years now about her maybe playing Ahsoka, and it looks like maybe that's finally going to happen.
And then Kyle Reese from the, I don't remember the actor's name, but
Michael Bean.
Michael Bean from Alien and Terminator is also joining in an unknown role.
It's so crazy that they were able to hide this. Like, production's done.
Yeah, it's been done for a while.
Yeah, they're good. I mean, part of it is the advantage of the way they're filming Mandalorian is it's all shot indoors on these absolutely incredible sound stages that use AI to render the backgrounds and stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's no like on-site filming. They don't have any of that. On location. So
there's no set photos or anything like that, unless it's leaked by somebody on the actual set.
Exactly. You don't have any of those outside people. So I would imagine that those sets are pretty locked down.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's not like the Batman where they can just sit and take pictures from a mile away and post them on the internet 5 minutes later for a million hits.
Yeah.
Right. Or even Endgame. I remember how early we got Endgame photos of them like down on the streets and stuff in like the mocap suits and everything.
It's true.
And all the rumors of different timelines started to come out because of those shots. Like they just don't have that for The Mandalorian, which, you know, is impressive.
Yeah, for sure.
Anything else? I don't know that we have anything else.
It's been a quiet news week.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then here's what we'll do. We'll go ahead and take our short break now. And when we come back, Ryan will tell us all about why he picked The Last Dragon as his bad movie review for this week. Just so you guys know, for next week, we are actually going to be talking about and discussing the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles live action film for its 30th anniversary. And I'm sure we'll talk about Secret of the Ooze a little bit in there too, but it's really about the first movie because that's the anniversary for that. So, all right, we will be right back.
Recently on the Heroes Podcast Network, Echo Station.
Well, what's the main planet that Endor, the forest moon of Endor? It's a moon. So there's a major planet, obviously, that it...
Is the forest moon of Endor? Is Endor the actual planet then?
See, isn't that confusing? Yes. Is it the forest moon of the planet Endor, or is it the forest moon called Endor?
Kaiju Curry House.
Because I'm just wondering, are Pokemon kaiju?
They are pocket monsters. They are pocket monsters, Paul.
They're monsters, aren't they?
They are yokai, officially.
Yokai?
Yeah, so...
What's a yokai?
Red shirts and runabouts.
Something we've talked about before, and other people have, but there's so much of... real life history involved with Star Trek, from Gene Roddenberry's days, his time in the military as a bomber crewman, you know, James Doohan serving, all these people and all these real life events that have impacted things. That's very realistic of political and military leaders kind of resigning in protest at a decision they can't control.
Subscribe today at heroespodcast.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict, and more.
And welcome back to this awesome podcast. We are talking about Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon on our latest bad movie review. 1985 classic Motown / Kung Fu wannabe film. Derek and Rachel were watching it for the first time. I was not.
Yep.
If you haven't seen it, it's kind of a weird hybrid movie, kind of a Motown meets Kung Fu. I don't even really know how to go any deeper than that with it, but it's a very interesting film. And I'm sure you guys have a lot of great thoughts that I can't wait to hear.
Nailed it.
I will say, surprisingly, this movie actually performed fairly well at the box office.
Yeah, I mean, triple its budget.
It did. So it had a $10 million budget. It made over half of that opening weekend alone, $5.2 million. And then it made $33 million in its domestic run, which adjusted for inflation would be almost $85 million.
It's pretty good in 1985.
I mean, considering that this, you know... It looks more low budget than I guess it was, which is unfortunate. But, you know, when you think about the biggest name out of this cast in modern day is William H. Macy. it's kind of a funny thing that it actually was doing pretty well in theaters, I have to say. But, you know, I don't know. People review it fairly well. It's got a 6.9 on IMDb. I think you described it fairly well. I think it's hard for me to know if it was meant to be satirical or not.
Hmm.
If that makes sense.
I mean, I never really thought of it as a satire, but that doesn't necessarily... I'm pretty dense when it comes to that kind of thing, so you might have picked more up from it than I did.
I don't think it was satire at all.
No?
No.
I'm with you.
Okay. I thought legit Berry Gordy with his drug-addled ass was like, I'm going to make a kung fu movie. Sir, do you even know how to make movies? I'm gonna. Like, that's what I think happened.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. So I am not a martial arts film expert by any stretch of the imagination. So I'm going to lean probably a little bit more on you guys for this part of it. But the Bruce Lee at, well, okay, so I guess spoiler alerts for anybody that cares about The Last Dragon from 1985. The Bruce Lee aspects to the film, I couldn't really decide how to feel about that, right? Because in the beginning of the movie, in the movie theater, they're playing a Bruce Lee film. And all I could think about the entire time is Mystery Science Theater 3000, Overdrawn at the Memory Bank, which is a Raul Julia film, where they're playing Casablanca in that movie. And one of the robots makes a joke about how you should never show a good movie in the middle of your bad movie. And that's what this made me think of. Right? Right? So, yeah. Like, they call him, Bruce Leroy. Thank you. Yeah, it's Bruce Leroy, and he's doing the noises that Bruce Lee would do from time to time, and he even wears a yellow jumpsuit that's very similar to one that Bruce Lee had. Mm-hmm. It felt really kind of strange. I couldn't tell if it was like a homage to Bruce Lee or if it was they were ripping off Bruce Lee.
I mean, I can give some clarity to that. I mean, Bruce Lee died in 1973 and this movie came out in 1985. Everything about it to me seemed like an homage. I didn't think that there was any real ripoff. I mean, that black culture and Motown culture Kung Fu plays a large part in their culture, in that culture for a lot of people. Wu-Tang famously is huge martial arts fans and has done some choreography and martial arts movies. That's where I get that knowledge from, since I'm not black, obviously. I don't have as much knowledge on that, but I know that it's been an important part of that culture for a long time. And I think this movie was trying to capitalize on that.
I agree. It did come off as, you know, just a love letter to Bruce Lee. I didn't think it was making fun of him or even trying to emulate. I thought it was more like, we're going to do this our way.
I could definitely see how people would think that it's making fun of him, or there's certain parts that might come across that way, since they really cheese up the Leroy character. And, you know, he eats popcorn with chopsticks, and I mean, everything about him is over the top in terms of like a kung fu fan. But I don't know. I don't think that it was. It definitely came across more as an homage to me.
Didn't seem malicious.
Right.
Okay. Well, I don't know that. I don't know that I meant malicious necessarily. You know, taking somebody else's ideas isn't necessarily done like with malicious intent as much as just opportunistic. You know,
that's fair.
That's more of the tone I was going with for that. So,
well, I don't know why genre movies like Kung Fu can't cross into other genres and appeal to different markets. So I think it was a brave attempt.
Yeah, I actually think it was fairly successful. I mean, it made a lot of money, like Derek said, and it's considered a cult classic. Mm-hmm. If you look at the IMDb user review or the Rotten Tomatoes user reviews, it's like 2.5 points higher than the. It's 8.4 versus like a 6.2 from the critics. So I don't know. The culture has kind of latched onto it, and this weird, you know, weird movie that you almost can't describe accurately. It did pretty well.
Yeah, you know, I laughed through a lot of it, of course, you know, because I mean it's an older film, and some of these martial arts films just don't age particularly well, and that's not necessarily their fault. But I think my biggest problem with the movie is that the story just kind of meanders a bit before it really finds its footing, you know, because like you have so many things going on. You've got the Shogun of Harlem, he's a thing, and then you've got Leroy and his journey, and that's a thing, and then you've got the you know, the bad businessman guy from every 80s movie, and he's a thing, right? And
he looks like the live action Gargamel.
That's fairly accurate.
Right? He looks exactly like I would picture Gargamel to look.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Oh, man. But like getting those three stories to actually like intersect with each other takes like an hour and a half, right?
Yeah, that dragged on. Also, I had an issue with the cuts. Like every change of scenery didn't feel like a story progression. I felt like I was watching three or four different movies until it all kind of made sense. So just the editing in that and the storytelling as well, it was very convoluted.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think there was definitely, like, the editing was certainly an issue for that, and the pacing was as well, because it almost felt like, for the first hour of the movie, it almost felt like it was different movies that they were trying to stitch together in post.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I couldn't really see where these things were supposed to intersect with each other, and there were parts of it that I really liked, actually. Leroy and Charles, I liked the two of them together. I thought it was really cute and it was sweet and a little awkward, but it felt like maybe there was some chemistry there. So I like that aspect of the story.
You like Charles being Laura Charles?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And what's funny about that is Tymac, the guy that plays Leroy, had never acted before this movie.
No.
And I mean, when you go back and look at it, I mean, it's pretty obvious. But
yes, it is.
The chemistry between the two of them was actually pretty good and made his acting better because it felt like he wasn't having to act as much.
It seemed like she helped him a lot through it and that maybe, you know, she calmed his nerves or something.
She was actually, if you ask me, the best actor in the movie, probably. I mean, she felt like a lot like Gina Davis, you know, in other 80s movies, somebody that, you know, has done a lot of these. And I don't think she had done a lot before this movie, if anything. But she was really good, I thought.
Yeah, she was.
I agree with that. I definitely think she was the strongest presence as far as like screen presence is concerned. But, you know, I don't really know her from anything else, though. Yeah, she acted up through the late 90s. You know, but she died in 2016.
Yeah.
Turns out
liver failure
fairly young, which is sad, of course. But they were cute together. I thought it was a cute little couple. It felt really nice. It was a little telegraphed because the little brother is like so obsessed with her. I'm like, okay, so she's going to end up with the older brother, but I thought it worked out. I thought it was, that to me was the best part of the movie.
The little brother was pretty great too. I thought he's always wearing leather pants, which is weird. And he's
didn't even notice that.
He's like 10 years old, but he's constantly talking about how he wants to make out with this, like, probably 20 year old at least woman, which is a little weird. You know, there were some uncomfortable moments when he's talking about it, like his brother, his brother doesn't know how to have sex. And he's basically saying he doesn't have a paintbrush and like all this other stuff as an allegory for, you know.
That was awkward. I did not like that at all.
Yeah, it was weird. But then you got the moment with Laura where he's like, I don't even have a paintbrush, which I thought was pretty good. But yeah, that whole thing was weird. But that kid was a pretty good actor. I don't really like kid actors, but he did pretty good.
Yeah, he definitely, he had a strong presence on screen as well. So, okay, how do you guys feel about the actual martial arts in the movie, the fighting itself, the way it was portrayed?
Okay. Well,
sorry for such a controversial question.
There were parts that were pretty good. You could tell there were multiple choreographers on the film, only one of which was I familiar with at all, and that was Ernie Reyes Sr., who was, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Surf Ninjas, but that might be my next bad movie review. From the 90s, but he was in that movie and he was a stunt choreographer for a lot of the stuff in the 80s and 90s. But his son, Ernie Reyes Jr., was Kino in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 Secret of the Ooze, which we're probably going to talk about next week.
Oh,
and he was also the
Kino.
Little boy. He was also the little boy in this movie. The little boy from the dojo.
Okay.
No way.
Yes, and when you the scene where they have all the thugs come in to the dance club to fight him.
Yeah.
The guy that the little kid is fighting that's like dressed up in camo, that's actually Ernie Reyes Sr. So the kid is fighting his dad. And so they did all the choreography. And that was some of the best choreography in the movie. Probably that because Ernie Reyes Sr. is a better choreographer than anybody else in this film. But yeah, that was a lot of weird like things I just threw at you guys.
Well, first off, that's adorable. And right? I love it. And that makes me really happy because that kid fighting was really fun to watch. He was
He's very charismatic, but he also was in Secret of the Ooze also. Like, he's just a charismatic person.
He did seem like, though, like of everybody in the movie, he seemed to be the best martial artist, which isn't a great thing for the film.
Right. That's true. But I mean, he grew up in martial arts, so yeah.
I legitimately thought that Leroy did as best as he possibly could. I thought that he gave it his all, and clearly he's not on the same level of some of the other people we've seen in these movies, Bruce Lee for one, Tony Jaa. But he held his own, I thought.
He was not bad.
No, it was really shown up that I was like, how is this guy beating you, dude?
Shown up was so good, though. He's so different than like all the other villains in movies in the 80s, right?
No,
like,
you're right. He is. I love completely... Shown up. Yeah.
But the Mr. Nuff.
Mr. Nuff.
That's but what the guy kept calling him.
The problem is that at the end of the day, the film's big bad is still the white asshole businessman.
Right.
Right.
With this completely like unrelated storyline of the girlfriend and the music video and like that whole thing.
Yeah, wanting to make money off his girlfriend.
Yeah.
But it just kind of, for me, it kind of undercuts the whole Shogun storyline because Shogun's been trying to fight Leroy for seemingly weeks or months or, you know, who knows how long, and hasn't been able to figure out a way to do it. But don't worry, this businessman will come in and make it happen for you. And like, that just was kind of, I don't know. I really could have done without that. I think you're right. I think Shogun was a good villain in himself. Whatever. But adding in Arcadian, I think was just, I think that was too much. I don't think it was needed.
Yeah, that was a weird storyline. Like, he had this tank with some sort of creature in it that we don't know anything about.
I'm so mad I didn't see that animal once.
Right? Like, and they use it, like, twice, and it's, and then it's abandoned.
But then at the end of the film, that when they're fighting in the warehouse, there's that, like, tank of water, and they're, you know, Leroy's getting dunked into it, right? And I'm like, oh my god, the thing is going to be in there. And then nothing happens.
I just thought that was dirty as hell. I was like, that's been sitting there. Let's not do that, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So one of my favorite things about this movie is that it takes place in 1985 in Harlem, but it's so what blows my mind is that it was filmed in the 80s. It takes place in 1985, but it looks way more 80s than the 80s actually were. Everything is like 80s dialed to 11.
Yes.
But nothing was like this.
Guys?
Yes. The fortune cookie guys. The movie scene that it starts right from the very beginning when he's sitting in the movie theater. And then like some guys come in with a boom box and start like popping and locking in the middle of the aisle. You know what I mean? Like, everything about this movie made the 80s seem so much more 80s than they actually were. And I love that so much. Like, it would be one thing if it was a movie that was made today and they made the 80s look so extreme. But this was actually made in the 80s, but the actual 80s weren't 80s enough.
So what you're saying is that The Last Dragon was ahead of its time.
I guess so. I don't really know what I'm saying, but everything being so turned up is hilarious to me.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
The fortune cookie guys were like ridiculous, and I love it.
They absolutely were.
I did like how there ended up being an explanation for the whole master thing. Like, there was a computer in the back. I thought that was pretty clever of a way to kind of wrap up that storyline. But I don't know that his original master sending him on a wild goose chase is the most responsible thing to do.
Well, his original master seemed to be looking for ways to teach him that were out of the box. obviously.
Or out of his or the sight, cookie. I
think. Out of the cookie, I guess. Right. But yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I didn't have that much of a problem. They could have probably done without the whole like master subplot also.
Well, that's the thing, right? Because I think there is a really good story in here. You've got, you know, Leroy is learning how to become this master and be self-sufficient, self-reliant, and he meets Laura, and they have a thing for each other, and he doesn't really want to fight Shonuff, and that's so he kidnaps his girl, and then that's how they get to fight. Like, I feel like that's a perfectly fine story.
Right. No, I'm not disagreeing.
So it's almost kind of a shame, because there's actually, I think there's a good movie in here, and I think they just way over-engineered it with all this extra stuff.
Right. No, I would agree with that. Did you guys watch this movie and like recognize random people and go, oh, I know that person?
Yeah, the driver, and of course William H. Macy was the...
Yeah, that was random. I had forgotten he was in this, honestly.
In that one scene.
Yeah. It was just like his first movie, though.
It was, and
Arcadian's like number two guy is like a mobster and freaking everything.
Yep.
Yeah, he was in Dumb and Dumber. That's where I knew him from.
Oh, sure.
He was the guy that was sent to kill him or whatever. I don't remember, but he then dies from the rat poison.
Right, in the car, he has to hear the most annoying sound.
That one too. Yeah,
yeah. Mike Starr. He's got like he just has that kind of personality that's really good for a mob boss kind of guy, you know. So I definitely noticed that
the girl. Arcadian's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
She is, or I knew her from Spin City. She was she was Richard Kind's fiance. But she was also nominated for a Tony for Guys and Dolls.
Yep.
By Broadway Revival. So she's pretty talented.
Well, there you go. Look at that.
Yeah.
I saw her and I knew the face looked familiar and I couldn't place it at all.
Yeah, that's where I knew her from. And it was been bugging me too. I ended up having to look her up on IMDb because, yeah.
So Ray, what are some parts about the film that caught your attention?
Oh boy.
Gotta get you involved.
Why? Oh, I don't know. Like, we've talked about a lot of the stuff so far.
That's what I was actually just going to bring up. One thing we haven't talked about is the soundtrack. What did you guys think of the soundtrack?
Well, it was all Motown music. It was all very recognizable. So I was kind of grooving to that.
Yeah, the soundtrack's great.
So DeBarge, Rhythm of the Night.
Yeah.
This movie was actually like, they didn't write it for this movie, but they did. This movie like released at the same time as the song. So this movie actually like propelled that song into popular culture.
That makes sense.
That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. We were watching it and my girlfriend asked, you know, was that written for this movie? Because a lot of the songs sound like a very familiar 80s song, but then they're just a little bit off. It's like a knockoff version of a lot of the songs, but that one was the real song, and that was this movie kind of propelled that to popularity, believe it or not. And then, you know, the Glow song is one of my favorite 80s movie songs.
He's got the glow.
Yeah,
so let's talk about the Glow for a minute.
Let's
because That for me was the worst part of the movie.
Really?
Yes. Not the song, the actual special effects. Because not the song, but the actual like the glow that they have and in the final fight. Because everything in this movie is very grounded and realistic. Everything that everybody's doing is real stuff that a person can do. It's a lot of bully gang violence and, you know, mob threatening violence and very standard kind of stuff. And then at the very end, in the 11th hour, all of a sudden there's like superpowers.
I mean, it's not really like out of the blue though. They talk about it the whole movie. Like even in the first like 5 minutes, they talk about the final level and getting the glow.
Yeah, I didn't realize an hour, because this is an hour and 50 minute movie here. I didn't realize that long beforehand that they were being literal.
But then you learned they were.
Yeah, and I just, that didn't work for me.
Hmm. That's disappointing.
I mean, I didn't mind it.
Yeah. No? I mean, like, the effects weren't great, but
I wasn't expecting great effects, to be honest. I didn't mind it because I just guessed from the beginning they were being literal about their like hand magic.
Well, okay. they also have said that master can make their body have a golden glow. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, they flat out describe exactly what happens. So, I mean, I feel like that's kind of on you, Derek, honestly.
Yeah,
for not
you're
expecting
just not
it.
Paying attention.
Well, now, hang on. So the original master at the beginning lies to him multiple times throughout this movie. So I have no reason to believe really anything that he says.
The guy just wanted to go on vacation.
Yeah, I know.
He just wanted this kid out of his house.
Oh, I get it. He gave him a belt buckle, and that was funny. But because Laura realizes it's a belt buckle, but Leroy doesn't. Yeah. That was hilarious. I really like that. But I like that it was grounded. Like, that's why, like, the movie in here that I actually think is a really good movie is that core story of Leroy, Laura, and Shonuff. I think that's the good, real story there. And I think when you start adding mystical stuff to it, it's even more over-engineering on top of all this other stuff. That's all.
Meh. I don't know. Mystical stuff in kung fu movies is not that outlandish for me, so I don't mind it.
In general, no. I mean, you're right. I just meant in this one film. That's all.
Okay. Well, I liked it, Derek.
I'm sorry.
The effects were so bad. Like,
they were not great.
For a $10 million budget, I'm pretty sure $6 million or $7 million of that was cocaine. And then the rest went to the actors, and they had like $500 at the end, and they're like, well, let's make the glow.
Well, I mean, when you think this movie came out, you know, 1985, so Ghostbusters was already out, the Star Wars trilogy was already out, so that's kind of an idea of what special effects can look like. But, you know, 10 million still isn't a ton, and there was a pretty big cast here, especially when you include everybody that had to be involved in the choreography and the fight scenes towards the end of the film. It's a lot of bodies.
It's true.
You know, and there's a lot of sets involved. I mean, you have the whole studio, which had to be, you know, dressed up. You had the pizza shop that had to be destroyed. You had the house. You had the dojo. You know, the fortune cookie factory. Yeah, you know, there are so many locations. Considering how little time this movie seems to cover, there's still a ton of places they have to go.
It's true. Yeah, I was thinking that when I watched it. I was like, there's a lot of sets on this movie.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I'm sure a lot of that was on location stuff, you know, to save on budget too, but it's still a lot of, you know, moving camera crews around and all those different types of things, and lots of costuming, you know, lots of people had to be in crazy getup. Very few people wore normal clothes in this movie.
It's true.
You know, pretty much everything was custom in some way.
And Leroy had a new outfit for just about every scene.
He did. I personally like the red see-through shirt over the tank top.
Oh, yeah. Super classy.
So here's some fun facts for you guys. Denzel Washington auditioned for both Leroy and Shonuff.
Yes.
Whoa.
Wesley Snipes auditioned for Leroy. Lawrence Fishburne lobbied very hard for the role of Leroy.
Oh, wow.
Jim Brown, Fred Williamson, Ron O'Neill, Billy Dee Williams, and Carl Weathers were all considered for the role of Shonuff.
What?
Yep. Yep.
Did some of them turn it down? Was it like cost issues, or why didn't we get that?
It says they were all considered, so I'm guessing that they didn't like them as much as they liked the actor that we got for them.
Man, that's intense.
I will say that I thought the representation in this movie was really good for a film in the 80s.
Yeah,
I mean, you had Chinese, white, black, all kinds of people in this movie that you didn't really get that a lot in the 80s, or like, you know, like in Ghostbusters, the black guy would be like the mostly uneducated guy that just kind of joins in later. Whereas this one, you know, they were all the races and even the women for a lot of it were portrayed as pretty strong characters.
They absolutely mm-hmm. were. The only thing that really bothered me about that was at the end, clearly whatever restraints they had on Laura was not good enough because her acting was just like super over the top at one point. And like she could have easily gotten away. Like she's a foot and a half taller than Arcadian, and she's still pretending that his tie is holding her back. So she had to work extra hard, and I feel like set design could have like made it a little bit more convincing.
That's true.
But yeah, her and the girlfriend were incredibly multifaceted for a very. It was just super unexpected. They could have just been there for looks.
Yeah, and Laura Charles did have kind of the whole damsel in distress, you know, storyline. But also, when she got kidnapped and taken to the apartment, she was like, no, I'm not playing this thing on my show. When
right.
she's surrounded by people that she, like, they might be wanting to kill her or, like, beat her up or whatever. So, you know, she got kind of a little bit of both. So I was kind of giving it a pass on how much they had her as the damsel in distress.
I don't mind that she helped move the story along by playing the damsel. I just mind that, like, at the very end, it really looks like she has to phone it in because there's no reason she should actually still be in any restraints.
It's true. Also, that dress she had at the very end was really bad.
It kept getting shorter and shorter, and I couldn't tell if that was the position she was in or if it was a costuming thing. They were coming up and like shortening it or something, but it started out much longer in the club and then got shorter and shorter.
Yeah, it was weird.
Well, what else, guys?
Any thoughts on any of that?
No, I mean, I'm with you there. I thought it was. It was never convincing at the end that she was really being held captive. That's all. Yeah.
I mean, he did have a gun, so, you know.
I mean, some of the time, like, there were times earlier on where she easily could have, you know, tried to, you know, do the foot stomp thing or hit him in the groin or any number of things because her legs are completely free.
There was a lot of nut kicks in this movie.
That's well, true. So. That was hilarious.
Yeah, they didn't let anybody off the hook. If you were a man in this movie, you probably got kicked in the nuts. If you're a bad guy, especially.
And she's also like 2 feet taller than this dude. So like, really, I don't know that she couldn't have just taken him.
Right, but didn't he also have the boxer guy? Which was another unnecessary storyline.
Well, after that, though, like when they're in that ending warehouse,
oh,
and they
okay.
split
yeah,
up
yeah,
and he,
yeah.
gets, he
right.
gets the kid, right? And it's just the two of them. And I feel like she could have taken him. I don't know. Like, yeah,
it's
of
probably
course,
true.
When Rock's around, it's a totally different conversation. But yeah, I mean, God.
The whole, yeah. I got you to throw your fight, so now you work for me. And it's like, okay. And then they keep referencing that. It's like, okay, we have like 20 storylines going on in this movie. Which ones should I be paying attention to?
First off, if you're gonna have a boxer in your film, don't call him Rock. Just don't do that.
I knew that would bother you.
Just don't do that.
And also, maybe have him box sometime in the movie. Like he never really boxed at all,
right? Because like he and Leroy never really come face to face.
No,
you know. And I feel like that could have been a cool moment to have, like kung fu versus boxing.
Yeah, it could have been like one of the Ip Man 3 moments when he's fighting Mike Tyson where you have kung fu versus boxing.
Right? Yeah, like, I just think that could have been, they didn't do it. It could have been cool, you know, but we don't even get to see like footage of him boxing on a TV somewhere or anything. It's just this weird, weird subplot that has zero bearing on anything. I mean, he's a henchman for like a mob guy. Just like, that's all I need to know. I don't need to know the why.
And whose creature was that? That they had against Hank.
I thought it was Rock's.
It was okay. So the way the movie explains it is Rock got it because Arcadian wanted it, and then Arcadian hated it, so he told Rock to get rid of it. But then Arcadian changed his mind and thought they could feed people to it.
Goodness.
But then he gets his head dunked in it. Hot head
so
need
great.
Cool water.
It was so good. That was such a great moment.
So what do you guys think it is? What's your speculation?
I don't know. I want to think it's just piranha. Like, yeah, I want to think it's just like a school of piranha.
I was hoping it was like a big barracuda.
Ooh, barracuda makes sense. It's definitely like a larger creature. It's not like a school of smaller ones, because there's a moment where you see part of it come out of the water.
So somebody actually made a creature for that, and it never got to be.
Well, we don't know how much of it was made. It could have been a very small portion. But, I mean, you might be right. But I think Ray might have it. It might be something like a barracuda. That's a pretty good guess.
It probably is. I don't know. I get, when I was younger and I was watching this movie, I always thought it was some kind of like sea monster.
Yeah, but I can see that.
It's just such a random thing. I don't know.
There's a lot of randomness in this movie that's just things you're like, oh, okay, and then they just move on from that, and you just have to keep going, you know.
So another thing I liked about this movie is Shonuff from the very beginning talks about how he wants to fight Leroy and everything else, but he like waits until Leroy actually wants to fight. Like, he could have started a fight with Leroy any of those times. He could have like, punched him in the face. And that would have started, because remember in the dojo, the one time the girl hits him in the face, or the woman hits him in the face, and he kind of like gets into a fighting stance and then backs off immediately. So obviously, like, they know they can push that button and get him to fight, but he doesn't. And so I like that Shonuff still has some kind of code of honor.
So I took it a little bit different, not as so much a code of honor as much as if he's trying to gain everybody's respect and fear, right? And so if he were to just jump Leroy and just take a swing at him and a sucker punch him or something, nobody's going to say that he's better than Leroy. They're going to say he just got the jump on him. Well, so he wants a public fair fight, so that way everyone can see him win fair and square.
But he doesn't want a public fair fight, because at the end he's fighting him by himself, basically. And I mean,
yeah.
And it's not that really fair and square, because Leroy had just fought like a room full of thugs, random guys biting bones in half or whatever. And,
Well, we don't know that Shonuff knows really about that, because that's part of the problem, though, right? Is at the end, Shonuff kind of loses his control and basically becomes an employee of Arcadian at the end of the movie.
Right.
And that I don't think is good for the character or the story. I think you remove that and Shonuff creates this monumental fight, and you don't need all the little henchmen people. You just need the two of them. And I think you have a much stronger story at that point.
I really want one of our friends to cosplay Shonuff, and then I want to be one of the thugs that he travels with. their outfits were all just so ridiculous. It was amazing.
Yeah, they were kind of crazy at times. I agree. So what else? Anything else you guys want to cover on this one?
Well, I want to know, like, the ultimate question. Did you guys like this movie?
No.
Okay.
I will not be watching it again.
I definitely liked parts of it. I really did like parts of it. Like I've said, it's not a great film. There's some significant problems with it. But I think if someone had just given it to some other script writer to do some rewrites, I think they could have had a really solid martial arts kung fu film in here.
It was really funny, because at one point I got kind of bored and I was distracting Derek while we were watching it, and it's towards the end and he looks at me and he's like, I've been waiting almost 2 hours to see this fight. And like, he gets kind of short with me, and I'm like, okay.
Well, okay. I need to ask, at some point you sent a message to our little group chat saying, what even is this movie? Where in the movie were you at that point?
Like the second or third scene after like jumping from like one to two cuts and no explanation why we went from this guy to this guy to this guy. There's
my
no
guess connect. Was it was the movie theater scene. That was my guess.
I think it was Arcadian at first. Oh,
okay, fair enough.
I was like, what is this? What is happening?
So good. That was basically the exact reaction I wanted. So you gave me exactly what I was looking for.
Woo! Fair enough.
I don't even know what to say.
Right.
So
Shonuff.
So fun story, guys. By kind of accident, because of our scheduling changes, we're actually celebrating the 35th anniversary of this movie.
Ooh.
I knew right that. Now. Just this, kidding. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the movie opened March 22nd, 1985.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Random.
So that worked out kind of nice. You know, originally this was going to be an April topic because we had Planet Comic-Con and then we were going to have New Mutants and some other things were coming up. But now, you know, we got to hit its anniversary, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, that is neat.
Mm-hmm. I should have
promoted it that way.
We should have, but I didn't realize that's what it was.
We haven't promoted this episode yet. So
that's true. We didn't know if it was going to happen.
Right, exactly. We've been kind of flying by the seat of our pants on this the last couple of weeks and trying to get into a routine. But I think we found our footing. This will work, and we'll improve. Audio quality will improve as we get used to it.
We've got to figure out how to live stream.
Yeah, we're going to work on that. And so that's going to be somewhere in our Facebook group, facebook.com/group/screenheroes. Be sure to join the group out there so you can keep up to date with the show, any changes, and see those live streams once we kind of get them all figured out. Anything else you guys want to touch on before we wrap up?
No.
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well, then with that in mind, I'll go ahead and close things out. Like I said, we'll be back next week to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the live action film. I'm very excited to talk about that. You can find Ryan at Buster Props. You can find Ray at Siren Ray. I am the Star Trek dude. Like I said, we have a Facebook group. I would really appreciate it if you come talk to us out there. We've been posting lots of articles and memes and polls and all that good stuff. So facebook.com/group/screenheroes. Join us out there. Or you can follow us on Twitter at Screen Heroes Pod. You can also subscribe to our show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Spreaker, Podcast Addict. You can stream it right from our website at heroespodcasts.com. Follow us on our Facebook page, which is the Heroes Podcast Network. You can find us at Heroes Podcasts on Facebook as well. And I think that's going to do it for us, guys. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time.
Guys. Am I the meanest?
Shonath.
Am I the prettiest?
Shonath.
Am I the baddest mofo lowdown around this town?
Shonath.
Boom.